You're about to hear chilling, uncomfortable, thought-provoking radio this morning, which some of you will find offensive. A man calling himself Eamon contacted me yesterday, justifying in his head why he joined the IRA.
I was 14 on Bloody Sunday when I watched my fellow Derry people getting murdered. And on the 1st of May 1974, when I was 16, I joined the Provisional IRA.
Before we hear that man in full, the context for this is important. Peter Taylor, the veteran journalist, said in his BBC documentary last night that if he had been a teenage boy during Bloody Sunday, he probably would have joined the IRA himself. Let's hear exactly what he said.
If I'd been a teenager that day on Bloody Sunday, I probably would have joined the IRA. I would have considered taking that final step, which is what happened to hundreds of young Catholics, men and women, because I think what Bloody Sunday did was legitimise violence. You know, if the state can use violence against us, we will use violence against the state.
Peter Taylor told The Nolan Show yesterday that he has never and would never support the IRA.
Now, I was aware of that, and I did choose my words very carefully, that the, you know, my contribution was not scripted, as one normally scripts in a documentary. It was very much as it happened. I was talking to the camera as if I was talking to, you know, you and the audience. But I qualified what I said. I said, if I'd been a teenager on Bloody Sunday, I probably would have joined the IRA. I would have considered taking that final step, which is what happened to hundreds of young Catholic men and women on and after Bloody Sunday. What I was trying to do was to explain to people what drove so many young Catholics and nationalists to join the IRA. Why do, you know, ordinary people decide to make this huge step and use violence to achieve a political end? And I was just trying to explain to the mindset that no doubt drove many young people to join the IRA after the trauma of Bloody Sunday. I have never expressed support for the IRA. I do not support the IRA. I do not support violence. What I've always tried to do is to get inside the minds of people who choose to adopt that particular path.
And yet, Peter, for those people listening to this morning, they're potentially victims, or their family members were victims of the IRA. Can you understand how they... For such a respected journalist to have said that, they may be wondering, come on, you could not have joined an organisation which was intent on maiming and killing so many people.
I did not say I would have joined the IRA, and I would never have joined the IRA. What I was saying is that this is the reason, Bloody Sunday was the reason why so many young men and women decided to join the IRA. There were other motivating factors as well. And I understand the feelings of victims.
There has been criticism of the veteran journalist. The DUP, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, said he was appalled by Peter Taylor's reasoning. Anne Travers has weighed in as well. Anne Travers' sister was murdered by the IRA. She too is upset at what Peter Taylor has said. But what you're about to hear this morning on The Nolan Show will stimulate debate around whether there is substance in the wider point the journalist was making. You will find some of this testimony unbelievable. You will find it uncomfortable, and you will want to talk to us about it this morning. 03030 80 55 55. This man was in touch with The Nolan Show yesterday. He told me he was a 14-year-old boy when he witnessed Bloody Sunday.
You see, everything Peter Taylor said happened to me. I was 14 on Bloody Sunday.
Well, just to remind people, on yesterday's programme, Peter Taylor was on The Nolan Show, and this was in reaction to his documentary, which was on BBC Two last night, which is currently on the iPlayer, in which Peter said, had he have been a teenager in Bloody Sunday, he probably would have joined the IRA. And there were quite a few calls taking exception to that. Some people really angry that Peter had said that. You come from a different perspective, Eamon. Tell us why.
Absolutely, 100% from a different perspective. I was 14 on Bloody Sunday when I watched my fellow Derry people getting murdered. I was at the front of the march. I seen the baton charge coming at us, and I ran. I ran under the back of the Rolls Royce flat, and there were people, one person on my right-hand side was shot, and one person on my left-hand side was shot. I don't know if he died or what happened to him, but both were shot, one on each side of me. And to tell you the truth, Stephen, I made a big, big impression on me, and I know exactly where Peter Taylor was coming from. Exactly. So at 14, I seen the, all this. I seen the, what they done. They bought the power troopers in straight from Belfast. They didn't even use local troops that was down here. They brought them in for one reason. One reason only, was to kill Derry people. Murder them. And it was seen...
Well,
was
and obviously they would dispute that, and they would reject that, and that is...
Well, sir, they can't dispute it. It's a well-known fact, Stephen. Absolutely well-known fact.
Well, the perception of facts in Northern Ireland can be different.
Yes, well, the tribunal fact.
It's also part of a live court case at the moment, isn't it?
Right, okay.
But
anyway, what I'll tell you is, the minute I got... my birthday's on April the 30th. And on the 1st of May 1974, when I was 16, I joined the Provisional IRA at 16 years of age. And on the 1st of May, I done my first operation at 16 years of age. I went out there with a gun and I had a hijack a car.
Do you realise what you're doing here, Eamon? That you're so openly saying that you got a gun. What did you say? You hijacked cars?
I hijacked a car. It was my very first job.
Well, you call it a job. Other people would describe that as terrorism.
That's not terrorism.
You're not entitled to a gun. You're not entitled to take the law into your own hands.
Well, I certainly wasn't entitled to. But the other was the paratroopers that was entitled, what they self-proclaimed, entitled themselves to go out and kill, especially brought in from Belfast, to go out and kill Derry people on that day.
And you say it wasn't terrorism. Do you think the person you hijacked wasn't terrorised?
Well, they probably was, but okay. But
well, what does that mean? They probably were and that's okay. No, it's not okay. It's never okay.
Suppose, Stephen, we needed to get revenge back, and that's exactly what I went out to do that day.
You'd no entitlement to get revenge back, Eamon.
Well, in my mind, that I was traumatised by what was seen and done to me. I went out to do it, and I didn't do enough as far as I was concerned. I didn't do enough.
What does that mean?
It means I didn't do enough.
What does that mean?
The circumstances surrounded that I didn't do enough, to be perfectly honest. Where I lived in the Craig...
You see the ease with which this is rolling off your tongue? It is shocking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't do enough.
Enough illegal activity? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Illegal. No, Stephen, you have no idea what people like me went through. You have no idea.
Tell me.
Right, Stephen. We had a large family in Craigan, right? We got a house in Craigan in the 1950s. And we were, but nowhere we were because we were Catholics. We were put in an American army camp, which you've probably heard of, Springtown Camp in Derry here, right? It was American. And that's where my first couple of brothers and sisters was reared. My mother had another two children, right? Another two children, and they died in that camp because of the conditions. They died in there because of the conditions, right? And then she went on to have another, believe it or not, another 14 children. 12 boys and 2 girls.
A job is when someone gets up and goes to work in a law-abiding way.
There's another thing. We hadn't got any jobs.
Your use of the word job is a euphemism. You were going out to maim and destroy...
Correct.
And the British establishment,
and we couldn't do enough. I couldn't do enough.
Would you please tell me what you mean by that?
Like, killing and getting rid of the British establishment out of my country.
Are you honestly saying to me out loud that you wish,
Stephen,
you had have killed,
Stephen,
more
I wouldn't
people?
Be on. I wouldn't be on here if I wasn't going to be honest.
So you're openly saying you wish you'd killed more people?
Correct.
Did you kill anybody?
I'm not telling you.
Well, you've already openly admitted to a criminal offence of being a member of the IRA.
Correct.
Were you ever convicted of that?
No.
Well, you might be after this broadcast.
Well, that's okay. Whatever happens, happens.
What do you mean by that?
Well, what's the sense of coming on to your show to give you my opinion? Do you hand information over to the police?
Why are you incriminating yourself?
You've no. The only thing you have belonging to me is a phone number, right? And the answer, whatever happens, that happens, anyway.
And why do you feel so strongly about putting this out into the public, Eamon, that you're prepared
because
to incriminate yourself
there,
and all?
Stephen.
Let me just make this point because I want to look after you here as well. You clearly are not stupid.
So
if you are willingly putting your assertion out there that you were a member of a prescribed organisation, and you know that incriminates yourself, and you know, therefore, that there is potentially the police coming after, the potential for the police to come after you because of what you're saying now, why do you feel so strongly about that you're doing it anyway?
Because, but I was telling you, we lived in the Craigan, Stephen, right? And anybody would know me, but loads of people would know me, as you probably would know. We were raided. Battered out of our beds at all hours of the morning, right? All hours, even when it was before I joined the Provisional IRA. We were battered out of our beds day in and day out. We were raided twice a day at times, twice a day. And this went on for years. And I see me Mallor getting hit with batons. I see me Fowler getting hit with batons. And you're asking me why I am better? You're asking me that question? I would love a wee fist-to-fist talk, you see, now, really. I would like to tell you a whole lot of things, but whatever.
I find it shocking how openly you're talking about this today.
Mm.
I think some of our listeners, quite a few of our listeners, will be utterly disgusted at the effortless way in which you have said you wished you killed more people.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you say you do realise that for every one of those human beings, they have potentially children, families, and the human distress that people like you and your attitude create.
Well, it is disgusting. Well, I'll tell you what disgusting is, Stephen. In your words, not my words, you're disgusting.
For any human being that would come on and say that they wish they'd killed more people, it is disgusting.
Right, that's fair enough. No, it's disgusting. But what I've seen on Bloody Sunday is disgusting. What has implanted a 14-year-old child, disgusting. Getting bit out of your bed in the early hours of this morning, disgusting. To get bit out of your bed and not able to go to school, disgusting. There's your disgusting fee.
And do you not think you should have the capacity, Eamon, to stand back from that? Let me just finish the point. To stand back from that many people may support you, that what happened, that was abhorrent and wrong, but it does never, ever justify you seeking revenge or to so effortlessly talk about taking human life. Do you not think that you should have the capacity to differentiate?
Well, maybe there's something wrong with me, Stephen. Maybe it's what the Paris imprinted and made me stuck my disgusting head, as you say. That's what the Paris put on it. What the Paris put on it. I didn't buy, Mueller didn't put us up. We were reared well. We were reared well until the trouble started. We were reared well. We were never butter. We never had no exchanges. We had nothing. But the only thing we had to worry about is when we were, my poor Mueller and father, was three on the Springtown camp because all the Protestants got the decent houses.
You sound like a very bitter man now.
I am, but I'm buttered. I am 61 now, Stephen. I'm 15 or 20, 15 years older than you. I listen to you every day. There's times I can't get on, right? There's times I get on. George and Shankill can get on every day. And Jim and the Pros never do nothing from the Shankill Road. He's on every day. And I never can get on. And I probably wouldn't have to go through all this palaver. Now, if I'd been able to get on years ago, on different occasions.
The profound sad part of this conversation we're having today, Eamon.
That it was a 14-year-old terrorised with a British army. That's a very sad thing I feel about it.
What I was about to say is the profound sad part of this conversation today is how that 14-year-old little boy, in your eyes, changed from having no bitterness to having the bitterness that you say you've had ever since.
Well, Stephen, the listeners will probably agree with me, and I don't care what religion you are and the circumstances that I was put through. But the circumstances I was put through, there's the reasons why I'm bitter.
It was a long time ago, Eamon.
A long time ago, and I'm still bitter.
Well, is it not time to let go of that bitterness?
And I'll tell you better again, Stephen.
No, but listen to me on that point.
Yeah.
Is it not time to let go?
I can't.
Why not?
Because of a post-traumatic stress, maybe. I don't know, Stephen. And I'll tell you, I might as well be finished now. Do you see, I'm going to start a campaign. Do you see that march that went through here on Sunday? With them boys with their letter F and their para signs it all over their shirts. Right, I'm starting a campaign that they never get over that bridge again. Starting from I lay this phone down. And that's the reason why. And I can hopefully block, be able to get enough people, they block any route to come over to the city side.
Let me come back to what I've just spoken to you about.
Yeah.
You're how old, 61?
61.
Do you not think you need to let that bitterness go?
I can't. My brain won't let me.
Why don't you try to get help?
Well, I've had it that long. I don't know how to go to help.
Surely we want the Northern Ireland where we don't see any more death and destruction,
Stephen,
and hurt and pain on all sides.
Always going to be trouble in Ireland until the British leave.
That's half the community you're talking about, Eamon.
Well, that's the way it is. They should never be in this country anyway. I'll tell you, here's one for you, Stephen. Do you see when I see, whenever I see the Ireland with the Union Jack on the top of it, know what I see there, Stephen? Know what I see there? It's like the Second World War and the Germans took over Cumbria. You see, you look at the Union Jack in England, but see that big lump of Cumbria? It's got the German flag on it. It's got the German flag on it because the Germans stole it. And every time I look at Ireland and I see that Union Jack on the top of it, that's what I think of. I think of the Germans come over and they scored a bit and they kept Cumbria, but they left the rest, I don't know. That's what I see.
I hope you find a way, Eamon, to lose your bitterness. I hope that...
So do I. I can't really see it now.
I'd say to you again, whether you realise it or not, the ease with which you talk about your capacity to hurt other people and your desire that you had hurt many people in the past more than you did is shocking, is disgusting.
I could have had thousands of people tapping me in the back and saying...
And by the way, I'm not talking about from the perspective of any one community against the other. I'm talking about if anybody were to come on this radio programme and say they wish they had hurt more people for whatever reason.
You can thank your British government and your partners for that.
And you realise, Eamon, that the police very well may be paying you a visit now.
Well, whatever happens, never was worried about police, ever. So I'm not going to worry about them. It's like them.
And finally, the reason we're having this conversation is because of what the journalist Peter Taylor said when he was reflecting on his time in Northern Ireland, when he said, had he have been a teenager on the day of Bloody Sunday, he probably would have joined the IRA.
And he is 100% correct. I'm living proof of it. I could not wait. I could not wait. I was 14 at the time, and I could not wait till I got to 16. That's where the indelible marks been left on me, through the British and their terrorism.
They would deny it was terrorism. They would say they were working within the rule of law.
Well, sir, it's been well proved it was terrorism, well proved it was murder, beyond doubt. And not only that, the people that like me, I probably would have never, ever joined if I was an IRA. Only because of the bars and the British government and the British establishment.
I just want to say this because I expect there will be a significant reaction to this conversation between you and I on the radio today.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say this. There will be some people challenging why you have been allowed to come on air. People joined paramilitaries in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
And your mindset shines a light on why some of those people may have felt that they wanted to join. And I think it will prompt a very interesting discussion today.
I can tell you now, only for the British government and the Paras, I never would have been like this.
Well, there were many people who hold your political objectives
violence. I'm only speaking for myself.
Yeah, there were many people who had more respect for life and humanity who did not turn to violence.
Well,
you just didn't have that capacity within you.
I wouldn't have turned to that. I wouldn't have turned to that. Only what the British establishment and the Paras done to me.
I'll leave it there, Eamon.
Right. Okay.
Goodbye.
Right. Yeah. Goodbye.
So it's chilling, isn't it? And there's a lot of reaction this morning. Some people, victims of the IRA, calling us today. Others saying that they were in a similar situation. Our number this morning, 03030 80 55 55. Brian in West Belfast. First call of the day. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Stephen. Just to be totally honest about it, if I had been living in Derry, I might have joined the IRA after what happened. The same, although it didn't, the same in where I live, Falls Road, the curfew, Ballymurphy. I felt then too, but I didn't. And that's what's happened. The British government have to take a lot of blame for what young people joining the IRA after the things they've seen. And that's been totally honest about it, Stephen. I didn't, thank God I didn't. And I finished up condemning what a lot of things the IRA did, uncalled for, loss of life, completely innocent people dying. So you have to realise, Peter Taylor speaking the truth too as well. If he said the exact same, there's a man who's seen a lot of things that's happened in Northern Ireland on both sides. And he says that too. And he doesn't live here. The British government have to take a lot of responsibility of young people joining the IRA.
For someone, Brian, who pulls on a balaclava, straps a bomb around someone else, puts a bomb in a city centre where there are men, women and children, takes a gun and shoots people through the head, they need to take responsibility for their own actions.
Yeah, totally
their
wrong.
Their own actions.
Well,
you're saying totally wrong, and then you're saying you would have had the capacity to do it.
No. I did not say that, Stephen.
You said you'd have the capacity to join an organisation which did that.
On the particular moment in time of we're talking about Bloody Sunday, okay?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys, and I would have been one of them joined up, but I wouldn't have wanted, knowing me, I know myself, I couldn't go out and do harm to anybody. I couldn't go out and do harm to any animal on the street here, cats or dogs. I'm saying on the moment, a lot of young ones did join up and had done terrible things. A lot of people joined up and didn't do nothing. It wasn't for them. They couldn't do it. Only on the moment seeing people been murdered on the streets and shot and so forth, they thought right away, this can't happen again. I'm going to join up. Well, they joined up, but they didn't go through with it. A lot of kids did go through with it, unfortunately. So to that. That's what I'm saying. I probably thought, if I had lived there, okay, I lived here during the curfew, what happened here? I had thoughts, but no, I didn't. I know myself, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it, Stephen. But a lot of young people did. And that's the unfortunate thing about it all.
Bron, thank you very much. 03030 80 55 55. John in Londonderry. Morning, John.
Morning. Is he in there, is he?
He's not, no.
No, I just wondered why a man, when he felt so bad about what happened in Derry, that he joined an organisation that's going to protect the people, but yet they went on to kill nearly 500 of their own people. How did that become a whole, you know?
What's your reaction to what you heard, John?
Well, it's not. There's nothing strange. You know, this happens all the time. They're there. These people are out there. You know, obviously lots of people join different organisations, but they join an organisation with the intent of revenge, and then go and kill 500 of your own people. That organisation, sort of ridiculous, wasn't it? Defeated the whole purpose of what they wanted to do.
John, thank you. Alison Morris from the Irish News is with us this morning. Morning, Alison.
Good morning.
Good morning. And the veteran civil rights campaigner, Eamon McCann. Good morning to you, Eamon.
Good morning.
Good morning. Alison, your thoughts on what you've heard this morning?
It made me sad, to be quite honest with you. I don't know who Eamon is or what he went through, but, I mean, he sounds like a very troubled person. And as a journalist in the last 20 years, I have interviewed dozens, and I mean dozens of people who have either been members of loyalist or Republican organisations. Some of them were able to speak much more openly because they'd already been convicted of and served prison time for at times atrocious murders and bombings and all sorts of things. But the majority, when you speak to them, while they'll say maybe they wouldn't have changed what they did, they do regret that there was loss of life. And then I don't think anyone that I've ever spoken to has gloated about taking someone's life. And I think that if you do, you're in a very dark, dark, dark place. He sounds like someone who needs a lot of help. And I think that at this stage and where we are now, there's nobody should be harbouring that much anger. We went through a terrible time, a terrible process.
He says, Alison, that he wished he had done more.
Just in my own childhood, probably wasn't that much different than his. You know, I grew up in West Belfast during hunger strikes in the 80s, and they were very troubled and turbulent times. But thinking like that would never even have crossed into my mind. You know, what actually the troubles made me feel was just sad that so many people died, because I've seen so many victims and spoke to so many brave families. And I think there's a terrible sadness and a regret that all of that happened. And if you're someone who still thinks that there should have been more people killed, I think then that you're in a very dark place. I don't think that his childhood explains some of it, and Bloody Sunday explains some of how people in Derry and how the troubles then progressed in that part of our world after that. But it doesn't explain why someone in 2019 would still be feeling such hate in their hearts. And I think that that's something that's probably a failure of the peace process. People like that haven't been identified and helped much sooner.
And Peter Taylor is coming under a certain amount of criticism this morning after his documentary last night, after his comment that he probably would have joined the IRA had he have been a teenager on Bloody Sunday. To be fair to Peter Taylor, Eamon McCann, that teenage boy that he was hypothesising about in terms of himself, Eamon, our caller this morning, was that teenage boy. He was 14 and at 16 he joined the IRA.
Yes, of course, he's a friend. Eamon is by no means a unique. And I have to say that I wasn't as horrified by that interview as others may well be, and I'm sure you'll find that out sort of, before your program's over this morning. I understood two things stuck out for me, sort of his reference to Bloody Sunday and what he saw on Bloody Sunday and what he experienced in terms of his emotional, understandable emotional reaction to that. It's sometimes difficult to explain to people just what an explosive effect Bloody Sunday had on so many people in Derry, and as you say, particularly sort of on young people. Bloody Sunday is different from other atrocities, which is one of the reasons why we've got it. We had two long inquiries, and why it is still to this day a very contentious issue.
Is it not dangerous, Eamon, though, understanding? Well, and then how far away from that is it condoning those people who decided to go out? And, you know, Eamon has not admitted to murdering anybody, but he's admitted to hijacking a car at gunpoint. Yeah. He joined the IRA aged 16. Mm-hmm. Is it not dangerous, understanding, and how close do you get to condoning illegality and human misery that these paramilitaries inflicted on this country.
Well, I mean, Stephen, I think one of the points that Eamon was trying to say, and which he did say, sort of over and over again, sort of, was that he compared, and he did it during your interview, sort of the violence that he might have been involved in inflicting with the violence, but the violence that the people around him had endured. Now, I'm not defending any IRA actions. I'm not a Republican, never have been. I've never had any time for armed struggle. But you may think that this is a condoning it, but one of the things that struck me from that interview was when Eamon said, you know, that he's seen his mother abused sort of by British soldiers, and that was not by no means unique. By no means unique. During house raids and so on, there are people humiliated, sort of, and her mother told in her own kitchen, sit down, you so-and-so, while we search your house and rummage through your drawers. I remember Father Dennis Ball, who was the chaplain to Republican prisoners, Catholic chaplain to Republican prisoners in Longkesh, and once saying that in his experience, the people in Longkesh who had been members of the IRA, they were more likely to have joined because of their mothers being insulted than they were because of any army atrocity or what's generally regarded as an atrocity. When you add that to Bloody Sunday, and as I say, Bloody Sunday, you have to remember, happened in broad daylight. This wasn't a bomb like, you know, at Lamon, for example, which was an unforgivable sectarian atrocity like a number of others perpetrated by the IRA, and on all sides, Bloody Sunday was in broad daylight. It lasted perhaps 17 minutes. Every single killing and wounding was witnessed by a large number of people, sometimes in very close quarters. Within hours of Bloody Sunday, we knew, everybody on the wrong side knew, we didn't think, we knew that the story being told by the British Army, the propaganda story, was lies from start to finish. It wasn't a slight exaggeration or a distortion. They were lying. Right. And when you've seen your neighbours shot down like that, sort of unarmed people being shot in the back, and Jim Ray lying on the ground, and a paratrooper coming towards him and shooting him with a 303 rifle, an SLR or whatever it was, lethal at 1,000 yards, shooting him as he lay on the ground at point-blank range. Lots of people saw that, witnessed it from within 20 yards of it. Remember, I have to remember this was after a civil rights march, and the place was awash sort of with people. So I recall the next morning, walking down Rossville Street, and the first thing that struck me was that everybody I met knew the names of the dead. They could rhyme them off, like a football fan rhymes off names of his favourite team. It had such a traumatic effect. And as I say, the close nature of it, the fact that it happened sort of in such a small area, in such a short time, in broad daylight, it was a lovely, bright day. And I was all that sort of made the effect of Bloody Sunday different.
And some people thought when they saw, when they saw that human destruction, when they saw that misery, when they saw families bereaved and traumatised, they thought, right, we need to now inflict that on other families in Northern Ireland. Is that not twisted?
Well, it's twisted when you look back on it now. It's appalling. You could say it's a terribly bad decision, but at the time when our young friend was, when he was 14, I mean, that's not a time sort of in the aftermath of something like Bloody Sunday where you're going to sit down sort of and discuss calmly, well, what do we do now?
And this
maybe
is
a failing. Sorry?
I guess, Alison Morris, this is part of the problem in Northern Ireland because, you know, Eamon McCann is saying Bloody Sunday was in broad daylight. Bloody Friday was broad daylight. So was Enniskillen. Does that mean there will be...
No, not really. Not in the same sense, Stephen. It certainly wasn't. What I mean when I say it was in broad daylight, it was in broad daylight where hundreds, perhaps thousands of people gathered in the houses all right watching, and that didn't apply. You know, and that's very important to understand because we knew what happened.
But the discussion this morning, Alison Morris, is for those people who will understand then why people joined the UDA, the UVF, who themselves terrorised communities.
We're trying to analyse historic events in a contemporary setting, and that's very difficult because we're in a very different place now, and people who were brought up in relative peace won't understand, I suppose, what things were like back then and how terrible they were for both communities, which is why we had so many people who did join organisations, so many people who went to prison, and so many people died. And if you get the book Lost Lives, which documents everyone who died during the Troubles, Every single one of those stories is a tragedy and happened in circumstances that are horrifying in front of people who lost them or in front of completely innocent bystanders who watched that and then had to deal with the aftermath of it. You know, you have children killed with plastic bullets. You have all these things, and they all fed in to a big melting pot which turned into something that was full of hate and ugliness at that time. We don't live in those times now. I think that what made me sad about Eamon's interview is he sounds like he still lives in those times. So I've seen all sorts of terrible things when I was growing up. I am now in a completely, you know, we live in a different set, and what it made me think was I wouldn't want my children to see that. I would want them to have a different life than me. But I think it struck me about what Eamon said, and I'm not sure that he's alone in that. There's probably plenty of people who sit in the house and who will never phone your show and who will never speak to me and who will never know or think in the same way, who are stuck at that time, whose mind seemed to not have developed past that and who seemed not to be able to get past the trauma of their very early years. And the fact that he spoke to you, I think, is what the unusual thing was, because most of those people would harbour those feelings privately.
Alison, thank you. Eamon, thank you.